paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
And I've been listening to that song dating back to my grandfather, listening to old-time radio on Saturday afternoons. It's Dave Player on Saturday night, Sunday morning on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. So Steve Darnall discovered the golden age of radio at the age of 12 while listening to Chuck Shaden's Those Were the Days, a weekly show looking back at the simpler times, the happy days, the golden years of old-time radio and beyond. Steve started his professional writing career over 30 years ago, and in 1993 contributed his first article to Nostalgia Digest magazine, and in 2004 took over as publisher and editor of Nostalgia Digest magazine, now celebrating over 40 years. Steve talks about radio's golden age at NostalgiaDigest.com, and joining me tonight to talk about the spring edition of Nostalgia Digest magazine, which includes stories about radio's transition to TV, Gene Autry, The Dark Knight, and more. It's my buddy Steve Darnall. Steve, good morning to you, my friend.
Thank you. Welcome. Hello, David.
For those who might not have seen an edition of Nostalgia Digest, and I got to tell you, and I say this every time, when I get it
in
the mail,
I
get very excited. It was almost like when in the 1970s I would get like a TV guide or my Sports Illustrated or my highlights magazine or whatever it was.
Right.
There was excitement in the air, and when I get that Nostalgia Digest, I'm excited to see A, who's on the cover, and I literally take it and sneak off someplace because it's almost like when you watch television now, you can DVR it all day long and watch it at different times. When that magazine comes, it's not going to sit for very long until I read it. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, the magazine is a 64-page quarterly that is dedicated primarily to the golden age of entertainment, and that's radio, of course, and movies and music and early television, as you mentioned. And also, when we can, we include first-person recollections of what it was like to be alive at that time. Because all those things are part of a not only an entertainment tapestry, but also a part of history, you know, that I've always been fascinated by the golden age of radio, not only because some of it has aged beautifully and is still tremendously entertaining, but it also tells us so much about the way we live now. I mean, the way radio works, but also, I mean, my gosh, the way we bought our soap and our cigarettes and the way we got our news at a time when the idea of learning what was happening in the next county over was still a novel idea.
Isn't that amazing?
You know, and I mean, yeah, I was interviewed for another station not long ago out in Salt Lake City because they had found a recording of when the station went to 50,000 watts in 1932, and they have this remarkable broadcast they did, a live event, of course, as they all were. And it's just sort of remarkable to think, yes, now suddenly the people in Salt Lake City are being heard in Provo. Oh. You just forget how the people in Chicago being heard in Hinsdale or LaGrange or...
I was in Nashville, I don't know, a month and a half ago, and listened to the Blackhawks game on WGN at 8:30 at night, clear as a bell.
Beautiful.
I was in Phoenix driving back to my hotel at midnight. I could hear it. It wasn't as clear, but it's amazing the power of that 50,000 watts. But about the magazine,
yes.
the entertainment value is great, but you say it's a lot about history. It's always educational. I always walk away learning something, fascinated by something.
Well, thank you. I mean, there's a lot to be fascinated by, and we've always tried to make every article in each issue different from the one before, and consequently we've tried to make each issue different from the one
sure.
before. So to some degree, we're very fortunate to have some terrific writers, but people, yes, who will write about Gene Autry or Jimmy Durante or Frank Sinatra. You know, those are three very different performers, but they've been our last three covers, and, you know.
I was going to say, Gene Autry graces the cover of this one. What's a little bit about, what are we going to see about Gene Autry?
Well, in the case of Gene Autry, our writer, Jordan, did a piece of just a history of Gene Autry. And I mean, you know, talk about trailblazers. We sort of forget, that's one thing I think we forget in hindsight is that, you know, there were a lot of singing cowboys, but Gene Autry was one of the first. And he was very unique in the deals he made, in the songs he sang. You know, he really, he invented himself numerous times. He was clearly never going to be an actor, but he did 90 films.
He was an entertainer, yeah,
well,
right?
Yeah. He always played Gene Autry, and I think he was smart enough to know, you know, he wasn't going to trick anybody into thinking he was Hamlet, you know?
Right.
But at a time when, you know, in the early days of the Depression, a lot of people needed somebody to relate to, somebody who could be heroic and entertaining and also be very average and normal. And he certainly seemed to fit the bill in all those regards.
He did. He absolutely did. We've got a little clip here of the Gene Autry show.
Yes, the Melody Ranch.
With Pat Buttram. And I the name isn't as familiar to me until you hear his voice, because he was Mr. Haney on Green Acres. Let's take a little listen.
Well, thank you, neighbors. Many, many thanks. And now...
Howdy, howdy.
Well, howdy. And now...
Don't suppose there's any chance of borrowing a loan of a couple of bucks from you till payday, is there?
No, there's no chance of borrowing a couple of bucks from me till payday. And now I want to...
How about one buck?
Look, Buster, the answer is still no. N-O. Not a buck. Not a quarter. Not a dime. Not even a halfpenny.
Well, why?
Because you're too lazy to work, that's why.
Are you kidding? Why should I work?
Well, so you can make money, for one thing.
Why?
So you can put it in the bank and save it.
Well, why?
So you can retire and not have to work.
Huh. Why go to all that trouble when I ain't working now?
So what did he say? What was it? A halfpenny.
Halfpenny.
Oh, it was a halfpenny. Okay, all right. A halfpenny will do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's one of the few Christmas songs he didn't sing, by the
exactly.
way.
Exactly.
Yes.
There you go. Batman, The Dark Knight.
Yes.
We learned about The Dark Knight. The evolution started actually on the big screen in 1943, and very topical with this Batman-Superman movie that just hit the theaters. It was in 1943, a 15-chapter serial in the theaters with Lewis Wilson as Batman, Douglas Croft as Robin.
Yeah.
But in 1945, it was never a radio show. It was never Batman on radio.
No.
But it debuted on radio.
Well, yeah, there were a couple of efforts to bring Batman to radio with audition shows that never went anywhere. But, yes, in 1945, the Caped Crusader and the Boy Wonder made their real first appearances on radio on The Adventures of Superman.
So this isn't a new meeting we're seeing right now in the theaters.
No, no. In fact, it's really funny because I grew up, as you did, with a comic book called World's Finest, where Superman and Batman appeared together routinely.
Yeah.
But yes, it all began on radio. And one of the nice things that the fellow, Brian Cray, who wrote the article for us, he pointed out some very important things about the radio show that became part of the overall mythology. I mean, it was really on radio that Clark Kent revealed his identity to Batman, to Bruce Wayne.
Oh, that's
first
cool.
Time.
Yeah.
Yes. And I mean, the Superman radio show, of course, we wouldn't have had Kryptonite without the radio show. The radio show was, I think, responsible for really bringing characters like Perry White and Jimmy Olsen to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of strange that Batman and Robin didn't make it on radio, because you would think, with all the characters they faced, you know, the Joker and the Penguin and the Catwoman, that, you know, it would be
great
such
voices.
Oh, and what a meal you would make of that as an actor to be able to play the Joker on radio and to just be the narrator describing this character with the chalk white skin and the green hair. But that said, they always lent a little bit of spice to the Superman show when they were there, a little bit of action. And obviously, to some degree, they were setting up the action so that Superman could save the day.
And a great article in the magazine about this as well. And here's a very, very rare clip we're going to share with you in 1945 of Batman on The Adventures of Superman.
Looking for somebody, boys?
A guy with a gun. Look out, Batman.
I see him.
Hey, Doc, get a load of this.
Kevin, get the boys.
I got you first, Joe.
Nice work, Robin. It's Dr. Bly. Oh, here come a dozen gorillas, and they've all got guns. We need reinforcements. This way.
Hey, you're running away from the stairs.
There'll be clay pigeons on the stairs, Robin. Up that ladder to the roof. Come on, hurry.
The trap door better be open. Oh, the sweet music of flying legs.
Come on, get that trap door open.
I'm trying to, but it's stuck.
Here, swing over.
I'll open it.
There.
Okay, that did it. Up we go. I'm up. Come on, Batman. You'll comb your hair later.
Okay.
Help me slam this trapdoor shut, Robin.
Right.
There we go.
There. Now, let's get going. What's the matter, Batman? Why did you get up?
I've got a bullet in my leg.
Oh. Here come our friends. Now what do we do?
Dismayed, young Robin looks down at the wounded Batman sprawled across the trapdoor above Dr. Bly and his gunmen.
Pretty cool.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, you know what? And I can't help but kind of envision Adam West and Burt Ward because that's what I grew up with. So that's what I'm thinking of visually when I see that. But yeah, that's pretty cool.
That was the funniest that was pieces that I've heard, guys. I'm sorry. Did you hear the line? Hurry up, Batman. You'll comb your hair later.
I did hear that. I was like, wait a minute.
And it was
what?
Like, Batman, what's the matter? I got shot in the leg. Well, hurry up. What?
That's what he said. I know. I heard that. I was like, wait a minute. That's
no,
cool.
Robin was a real wisecracker on radio.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and one of the nice things about the article is that the author actually takes the time to point out who some of those voices were. That was a fellow named Stacey Harris who did a lot of radio. But at one point, the voice of Batman on radio was played by Gary Merrill, who later married Betty Davis.
Oh, look at that.
And they co-starred in All About Eve.
Okay.
As a husband and wife.
So they did that a little bit on radio. Then in 49, Batman and Robin, another 15-chapter serial starring Robert Lowery's Batman, Johnny Duncan as Robin. Mm-hmm. Then the next time we saw them was really almost a decade and a half later, was when Adam West and Burt Ward, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, the comic books were still being published, but you're right. In terms of mass entertainment media, they kept pretty quiet, but of course that TV show just was a game changer.
My kids have all seen it, and what's funny is my 3-year-old, because it's really a harmless show. It really is. I mean, outside of some beating up and so forth, it's pretty harmless. My 3-year-old loves that show. He's like through the first season already, and he's like, I want more. So we have a TV like in the house, my TV in the front room, that old one that will sit in front of and watch all those episodes.
Oh, no, I can still quote lines from that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Gosh, Batman, is there anything you don't know? Oh, yes, several things.
Exactly. You know, they came back after they did that and they did the movie. They came back in 72, which you think about this, 4 years after it's canceled. Hey, guys, come down. We want you to do a public service announcement for equal pay. And Batgirl was in it. So
that's
it was
right.
About,
in fact,
she should get paid.
That's
as
right.
Much as
I, in fact,
else.
I don't think Adam West was in that. I think
it was just Burt Ward
and Dick Gauthier.
Look at you!
Oh.
Look at you with that. That's right.
Well, I absorbed all that stuff at the right time.
You did,
but no, it was and yes. I mean, as you note with the new Batman versus Superman movie, and I have not seen it because I'm not a big fan of courtroom drama. it's funny because as a rule, the digest isn't necessarily topical because it's sort of like most of the people on our cover have nothing new to promote. It's not like Taylor Swift being Rolling Stone.
You should try that though.
well, she has written an album about 1989, so maybe
there
I should.
There you go. A little retro. Yeah.
You know, it is really nice for us when we can find something that ties in directly to the current zeitgeist, if you will, the current situation.
Well, there was another thing in 79. There was something called The Legend of the Superheroes.
Oh, yeah.
And I had that bootleg. I know it's horrible. Oh. But it's interesting because this is now 12 years after the show ended, almost 11, 12 years after the show ended. And here's Burt Ward and Batman dressed up. He had a little bit of a gut.
Oh, yeah. A little more of a gut. Yeah.
Yeah. But then you got the Smallvilles, you know, that were on their Gotham, the new show that's on Fox right now that keeps carrying that on. But, you know, as much as I watched the TV show, it was all the animated stuff with all the Super Friends and the Adventures of Batman that I believe were on Bozo, I think. Actually, they were like little segments
right.
on there
that's
as well.
Right. And, of course, in the 90s when Paul Dini and Bruce Timm were doing that Batman animated series, that really that was as important as anything in bringing the character back to prominence, I think, in the 90s.
But the late 70s, even through Super Friends and this new Adventures of Batman that was done by Filmation and Hanna-Barbera, Adam West and Burt Ward voiced still 10 years later.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and I think Adam hated that. I know I interviewed him a while ago. He was very typecast, obviously, at the time for years.
And I mean, but that said, that's part of animation is not too dissimilar from radio in that you're acting with your voice.
True.
And so a lot of radio actors went into animation when radio dried up. I mean, Olan Soule, who was the star of the First Nighter program for many years, was the voice of Batman on the Super Friends.
See, look at that. Yeah, that's right. Boy, you are all over this, man.
Well,
love it.
It's what I get paid for.
You do get paid for that.
Not enough, but no. There you are.
Other features in the magazine this quarter. What do you got?
Well, we've got our necrology for 2015, where we look back at all the folks in entertainment that we lost last year. There's a nice article about Gregory Peck. There's actually an interview, and I'm really thrilled about this, with actor Norman Lloyd, who, among other things, his credits go back to the Mercury Theater with Orson Welles, but he was also the producer of Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Oh, that's cool.
And he's in the film Trainwreck with Amy Schumer.
Get out of here.
Yes.
He's
the old fellow at the nursing home with whom Colin Quinn converses. He's the one in the wheelchair. It's like, but the water aerobics class, Natalie's wearing her two-piece.
I love that we go from Super Friends and
Trainwreck.
The Trainwreck with Amy Schumer. That's
like
fantastic.
I say, and fascinating life he's had. He worked with Hitchcock and Welles and Charlie Chaplin and Amy Schumer. And who else on earth can say that?
Yeah, nobody. Nobody can do that.
So, I mean, there's... And a lot of neat articles.
Radio into television, which is a big thing that we'll talk about after the break as well.
Can we mention the website?
Absolutely. Yeah. How do we get a subscription?
You can order online at nostalgiadigest.com, or you can call us at 773-769-6575.
All right, more with Steve Darnall next on 720 WGN. So Dean gave the Batman Superman a B-. And I'm going to say he was right on with that, because I didn't find it to be, there's some people you say, have you seen the new Batman? Ah, no, I'm not seeing that piece. Well, you got to go see it. And it was actually pretty good. There was moments that you were kind of like, there was some serious head scratcher moments, but I thought it was good. Is there a Batman movie for you, Steve or Roger, that stuck out for you that you like really said, wow, this really kind of captures it, besides the Adam West one?
Besides the Adam, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
That's right. Yep.
He's on the pier on that one. I remember that.
I don't know. I mean, I have to admit, I really, I thought Batman, oh my God, I'm going to mix up the
Michael
titles
Keaton?
Now. No, well, Keaton was a good Bruce Wayne, I thought.
Dark Knight.
Actually, it's funny. I remember at the time being impressed by the film with Val Kilmer and Jim Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones, just in terms of its energy. But it's hard for me. I, of course, I've worked in comic books, and I read them professionally. So I may be a little too close to the source on that.
Roger, did you have a...
Well, and I kind of going right off of what Steve was just saying, I grew up on the comic books.
Yeah.
For both Superman and Batman, I didn't see the Superman cartoons till way later.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were many iterations of Batman. Batman went through phases in the comic books.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so that's how the movies have kind of gone. You had your traditional Michael Keaton, the Joker... then you had the Dark Knight series, which goes off in a different direction.
Right.
So it's hard to put a finger on it.
This one was a lot darker, and I'm not going to give
anything. And that's where
away.
A lot of the what do you call it, Steve? The one-offs, like the special comic books that kind of go in a different direction on a main character. That's where those are going towards, and I think that's where the movies, at least the DC side, as opposed to Marvel, I think that's where the DC side is starting to go on.
Sure. Dave on 720 WGN, we're talking to Steve Darnall of Nostalgia Digest magazine and nostalgiadigest.com, where you can get a subscription to this terrific magazine. We've been talking about all the great articles that are in there. One of them is Radio into Television.
Yes.
Because there was that time.
Well, yeah. I mean, and as we love to cover stories about radio, but we also acknowledge that television is part of this, what we do as well. And yeah, we had a great piece, which we were pleased to publish, about the radio comedians who moved to TV, some of whom were hugely successful on radio and couldn't quite do that on TV, like Edgar Bergen.
Yeah.
And then conversely, the
which
ones...
Which is odd.
Yes, of all the things, the ventriloquist.
Yes.
Who
because people question, wait a minute, it was a ventriloquist on radio? It's that's the one you expected.
Yes. And you just think would be a natural visually. Yeah. And then, of course, Milton Berle, whose radio career was checkered with failures.
Dismal.
Yes. And I mean, despite working with some very talented people, he just never clicked. But then television and bam, he's the major, major star.
And two of those shows is Jack Benny and Burns and Allen, which transformed beautifully and went on for a decade.
Oh, yeah.
And really, Jack Benny a decade and a half on television.
Absolutely. And I think Burns and Allen are one of those rare shows that went from radio to television and got better.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you could...
We were talking
George
about that.
Burns talking to
it's
the
on
camera.
Next to us on Antenna TV.
Yes.
Which is hysterical.
But you're midway through it, folks, so
don't change now. Exactly.
No, because you had George Burns doing the monologues to the camera, like in Our Town, and you got to see people react to Gracie Allen, which was a huge part of what made that show a success, I think.
Now, a little transition here from the magazine. You do a monthly podcast, which features one of the stars of Burns and Allen. But first, talk about that podcast.
Well, the podcast we've been doing about 5 years now, and it came about enough people were asking if we'd planned to do something like that. And I thought, well, I didn't want to just do a condensed version of my radio show. So I thought, well,
some unique content.
Yeah. So I decided we would create something that would focus on subjects we had written about in Nostalgia Digest. And so over the years, we've covered everything from we've spoken with Alex Ross about comic book heroes on radio. We've talked with Joan Benny about her father. We've talked with Robert Klein about the comedy legends who worked in the Catskill Resort.
I did something with you a couple of Christmases ago, didn't I?
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
we've had David Plyer talk about Hard Rock Coco and Joe.
That's right.
It's been great. And then when we're not talking to people, we do sort of an audio version of articles, you know, where we'll look at someone or something, examine it through, in this case, B. Benaderet, with some sound clips from the shows she was on and the people with whom she worked. And it's a nice way to sort of let people know what these shows and people and actors are about.
She was a million voices.
Oh my gosh, she was a million voices. B. Benaderet was everything. She was Betty Rubble, of course, on the Flintstones.
Yeah,
she
was probably best known for that and Petticoat Junction to television watchers, but radio, she was like one of the queens of radio.
Oh, my gosh, she worked, well, of course, yes, with everybody from Jack Benny to Burns and Allen to Fibber McGee and Molly to Lucille Ball. I mean, she was on the show that was the predecessor to I Love Lucy, My Favorite Husband.
And Green Acres, actually,
too. And the predecessor to Green Acres, yes.
She was considered for the role of Ethel Mertz in I Love Lucy, and she was already contracted, I believe, then with Burns and Allen.
Well, she was
Burns
and Allen. She was wonderful. And so it's nice because I love being able to publish articles about these people, but it's nicer still when you can illustrate specifically what it was that they did that was so good and so important.
Here's a clip from My Favorite Husband, which was a predecessor from I Love Lucy.
This is from the podcast, right?
Mm-hmm. Let's take a listen.
I'll get it, Katie. Hello, Liz girl.
Well, come on in, Iris.
Well, I stopped by the bookstore and got the most wonderful book. It's called Baseball and How to Play It.
Oh, wonderful. Will you help us, Katie?
All right. Class will come to order.
Let's see. Our baseball team is composed of 9 men.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Iris, don't forget they're going to be our husbands.
Oh, nuts.
Classic. I mean, she was so many voices. She was Granny, by the way. I had to mention this.
Yes.
On all the Warner Brothers cartoons.
Sylvester. Well, yeah, up to a point, I think, in June 4A.
Yeah, 40s and 50s, yeah.
But yes, and she was, of course, the voice of Little Red Riding Hood, opposite Mel Blanc's Bugs Bunny, the most obnoxious Red Riding Hood.
Yes,
ever.
I didn't know that was her.
That's her.
Look at that.
Oh my God. No, she was just remarkable. And I think the Warner Brothers cartoons really secured her place as a character actress and a dialectician because She'd done a lot of radio drama, and we feature some of it on the podcast. But once it became apparent that she could do anything on a Warner Brothers cartoon, she was doing the Benny Show and the Burns and Allen Show and Fibber McGee and Molly, playing characters, which she was so good at.
And she's been gone almost 5 decades already,
yeah,
which is crazy.
She passed away.
Yeah, right when Petticoat Junction was still on the air. I found one clip that I wanted to share. That we were talking during the break that there was not a lot of interviews of her. Maybe
no,
a couple
she was
of some
never
written.
So famous that she was the subject yeah. of talk shows or anything like
but
that.
But here she was a guest of Password, I think, with Eddie Albert, and talked a little bit about the new season of Petticoat Junction. But I was curious to hear, you know, all the different characters she played. What does her regular voice sound like?
Yeah, because she grew up in California.
Let's take a listen.
Hello, B.
Hello, Alan.
It's nice to have you back.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
Hello, Eddie.
Alan, how are you? How's Betty?
Oh, she's fine. B, it's good. Tonight's the opening of your new season.
Yes, it is.
Petticoat Junction
Petticoat
opens
Junction
again.
Petticoat Junction for our fourth season.
And congratulations. It's such a successful show for a good reason.
Thank you.
What are you going to do tonight? Can you
well,
tell us?
Well, we have a new love interest in our show.
Oh, are you going to get married?
No, I'm not. I said
you in
new.
Love?
I didn't say old.
You're always in love. Who's in love?
Well, that's kind of a secret, but it will be one of our daughters.
Yeah. So
how about that?
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Very nice.
Rare and very rare, too. So you've got some upcoming appearances, and you do this quite often. I know you do something that's called the Beginner's Guide to Old-Time Radio, which I absolutely love that you do to introduce
Thank
other
you.
People. But you're going to be at a couple of these libraries talking about all kinds of great stuff. Give us a
Yes. Well, over the years, we've actually put 4 different presentations together. We've done one about the Beginner's Guide, as you say. We've done one about radio and the Great American Songbook, which we're going to be doing this Thursday, April the 7th. At the LaGrange Library. We've done one called Lights Out Everybody, which is about mystery
That's
and horror
cool.
on radio.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing that Thursday evening at the
That's a great
Woodbridge
introduction
Public
to
Library.
Radio.
I think so. And
Theater of the mind.
It's always
know?
Wonderful when you can do that talk at night because then you can turn out the lights.
Yeah.
And then we do one called Heroes on the Air, which focuses on comic book and comic strip heroes who moved to radio. I mean, that was really... For characters like Orphan Annie and Superman, that was really – moving to radio was really the first step toward the cultural dominance that they went on to enjoy. I mean, before Broadway, before movies, they went on radio. And we'll be doing that talk actually on Monday, April the 11th at the Crestwood Public Library. We're doing a lot of these, as you say. We're in Wheeling. We're in LaGrange Park. We're in Oak Park. We're in North Riverside. We're in Roselle over the next few weeks.
And you can catch it all at NostalgiaDigest.com.
NostalgiaDigest.com has our full itinerary.
Which is also how you can get a subscription. And again, it's a quarterly publication, a great magazine, lots of fun to read. What is it for a subscription for a year?
1 year subscription is 4 issues for $17.
That's a great deal, folks. I got to tell you.
2 years is 8 issues for $30.
Yeah, it's a great deal.
So you even
great
save
deal.
More money. It's great fun to do, and I like to think it's like Jiffy Pop. It's as much fun to make as it is to eat.
I still buy that, too. Kids
yeah,
love it when
and,
I make it, yeah.
You know, and it's thrilling now to know because we're in several hundred stores as well, but we'd love to hear from folks at NostalgiaDigest.com, or you can call for a subscription at 773-769-6575.
Steve Darnall, everybody. Thanks so much, pal. Have a great Sunday.
You too, David. Thanks.